For 250,000 years, humans lived in grinding poverty and violence. Then suddenly, in just the last 300 years, everything changed. This transformation, which Jonah Goldberg calls the miracle, represents the most profound shift in human history. Imagine an alien checking on humans every 10,000 years. For 23 consecutive visits, they'd see virtually no change in how we lived. Then suddenly, on the 24th visit, they'd find us with smartphones, skyscrapers, and space stations. How did this happen? And more importantly, why are we in danger of throwing it all away? The miracle began just 300 years ago, merely 6 human lifetimes. Yet our evolutionary programming remains essentially identical to our ancestors who wandered African savannas. We're running Stone Age software on Space Age hardware. From our genes' perspective, we weren't designed to live with today's wealth, rights, and freedoms. Our natural condition isn't merely poor, it's tribal. For most of human history, we lived in small, wandering groups where all meaning was tribal. Human nature hasn't changed, despite our radically transformed world. Money was one of history's greatest liberating inventions, reducing violence by offering commerce as an alternative to conflict. A bigoted grocer's self-interest encourages him to overlook differences when selling to customers he might otherwise despise. Trade builds trust, encourages equality, and creates objective metrics to judge people by their work rather than identity. Yet capitalism has a fatal flaw. It doesn't feel like cooperation, despite being the most cooperative system ever created. When civil society fails to provide belonging, human nature rushes in as tribalism. The secret of the miracle lies in holding this tribal tendency in check. Social contract theories suggesting humans voluntarily traded freedom for security are incorrect. Instead, civilization emerged through what economist Mancure Olson called the stationary bandit, an imposed order people couldn't refuse. Hammurabi's code functioned as operating software for large-scale cooperation, establishing rules for violence, commerce, and social status. Though brutal by modern standards, it marked progress by making punishment predictable, standardizing trade, and formalizing social structures. The code's effectiveness came from codifying existing cultural norms rather than replacing them. Written law, both civil and religious, worked within human nature, capturing knowledge gained through generations of trial and error. The state exists as a myth agreed upon, real because people believe in it. Our civilization rests on shared stories about money, rights, religion, and authority. These collective fictions serve as society's operating system, enabling mass cooperation. The miracle, Europe's sudden prosperity explosion in the 1700s, began in England, a damp island whose people pioneered the revolutionary idea that government should be subject to law. England's exceptional development stemmed from 5 key factors: a unified nation-state, competing civil institutions, protective island geography, religious pluralism enabling innovation, and a unique common law system placing state power under popular control. English democracy had ancient roots. Kings met lords in the open, pledging to serve their people, a practice dating to the 600s. Unlike continental Europe, England developed strong private property rights. English landowners could sell their property or will it to non-heirs, while European peasants rarely truly owned their land. Capitalism's rationality both requires and erodes crucial social foundations. The free market depends on extra-rational customs and traditions, thrift, delayed gratification, honesty, individual sovereignty, derived from Christianity, custom, and family. Yet its relentless logic simultaneously undermines these essential cultural values. 2 competing creation myths shape modern Western political thought: Locke and Rousseau's contrasting views of human nature. Locke championed individual sovereignty, God-given rights, and equality before law, while Rousseau prioritized the collective, viewed property as sin, and blamed economic inequality for society's problems. Locke's second treatise justified English liberty through universal principles. Starting from all the world was America, a propertyless state, he argued that self-ownership formed the basis of all rights. Government emerged as a voluntary creation to protect these pre-existing rights and property. Rousseau sought collective salvation through a new civil religion. His vision updated tribal instinct, binding citizens to the community and making the group itself the source of meaning and religious devotion. This philosophical divide reflects Western civilization's core tension, viewing progress as liberation versus seeing civilization as corruption. The split transcends traditional politics. Leftists can be unknowingly Lockean, while conservatives sometimes channel Rousseau. The Founding Fathers' Declaration of Unalienable Rights wasn't actually self-evident. Unlike physical laws, natural rights require belief. America's breakthrough was codifying these principles, expanding ideas the English had originally claimed only for themselves. While critics highlight the founders' exclusion of slaves, women, and the propertyless, this overlooks their role in advancing human rights. The Declaration built upon English concepts, transforming principles like an Englishman's home is his castle into constitutional protections like the Fourth Amendment. The founders improved upon Locke by creating divided powers to prevent factional tyranny. The Constitution and Bill of Rights placed fundamental liberties beyond government control, distinguishing American Lockeanism from Rousseau's philosophy of collective rights. The Constitution's greatest strength lies in its written, hard-to-modify nature, creating civic ownership and establishing clear paths for resolving political disputes. The administrative state emerged from a progressive revolution that sought to replace constitutional order with rule by unelected administrators claiming expertise-based legitimacy. This fourth branch operates beyond constitutional bounds, with bureaucrats making decisions without voter oversight. Congress has ceded its legislative power to regulatory agencies, creating a parallel justice system where administrative judges, employed by prosecuting agencies, preside over cases with limited rights and no juries. Our culture increasingly embraces tribal thinking, driven by evolutionary adaptations that favor emotional, group-based responses over reason. Popular culture reflects this craving for collective meaning in our rationalized world. As civil society declines, partisan identity fills the void. Political parties have evolved from loose coalitions into fundamental tribal identities. Politics becomes a zero-sum game, with social media amplifying tribalism through public displays of partisan loyalty and opponent degradation. The family serves as civilization's crucial mediating institution, transforming natural-born barbarians into decent citizens. While marriage remains stable among college-educated Americans, following the traditional sequence of education, marriage, and children, it has declined sharply among working classes since the 1960s, shifting from an institutional to a self-fulfillment model. Our educational system now produces idiots in the Greek sense, intelligent people lacking basic civic knowledge. Many graduates of elite institutions cannot name fundamental American documents or explain basic governance, forming a reserve army of ingratitude, blind to their inherited civilization. We stand at a crossroads. The miracle that transformed humanity from poverty to prosperity wasn't inevitable. It requires constant maintenance. As tribal instincts resurge and institutions decay, we must choose. Sustain the unnatural systems that enabled unprecedented human flourishing, or surrender to tribalism and watch the miracle unravel. The decline of Western civilization isn't inevitable, it's our choice.